got a chance to head south and be the keynote speaker at the White Coat Ceremony at the Medical University of South Carolina. I want to thank the faculty and the students down there, the family and friends that came for the ceremony as well, for making me feel so welcome. It was truly a remarkable weekend. I had a chance to give the talk and told three stories that really impacted my life as a person and as a physical therapist. Got a chance to spend some time with more than a few of the students at MUSC, a truly remarkable group of young men and women, looking forward to see what they'll accomplish next. I'll be honest, I talk in front of people for a living, and this one was a little bit nerve-wracking, talking in a different format, different setting, something as serious as a white coat ceremony, but as nerve-wracking as it was really fun. So really appreciative of the opportunity to do it. First round is brought to you by Owens Recovery Science, a single source for physical therapists seeking certification in blood flow restriction rehabilitation training and the equipment you need to apply it. Check out owensrecoveryscience.com.
The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
Welcome aboard.
This is the PT Pintcast. Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
Now I'd like to introduce our speaker. It is Dr. Jimmy McKay. He is the founder, CEO, and host of PT Pintcast. It is a podcast that is on iTunes, been downloaded over 1 million times with 300 episodes, listened to in over 131 different countries. That's almost as many countries that are represented in our class. So if you'll join me in welcoming Dr. Jimmy McKay.
Give that kid a hand right there. Typo. Yeah. Distinguished faculty, celebrated alumni, excited parents and family that get to listen to another speech from some guy. And of course, elated PT students from MUSC. Give yourselves a round of applause. You finally get to put on that white coat, although I saw a couple of you trying it on back there, and that's not allowed. It's bad mojo. You finally get to go out and leave the classroom to get to work with actual human beings who are not your classmates. Looking forward to that. I'm here today to tell you three stories. Yeah, that's it. I came from New York to Charleston to tell you three stories. And when I'm done, I'm going to go right back to King Street. What I hope you take away from them are the lessons that they taught me. Now, these lessons can be applied to work with your patients or on relationships with your family and your friends. They're about fear, perspective, and finding your why. We'll start with fear. I learned a lot about fear at age 10 in the batter's box of the Walden Little League. Well, cowering in the batter's box of Walden Little League is more like it. See, I was scared about getting hit by a baseball. I mean, petrified. I would just think about it over and over. I'd perseverate. The pitcher throwing it as hard as he possibly could. That moment when I realized it was going to hit me and it was going to hurt a lot. So I stood there with the bat on my shoulder and hoped to draw a walk, which is not the best strategy to employ if your current career goal is to be drafted by the Yankees. So I did something pretty forward thinking, I thought anyway. For a 10-year-old, I asked somebody for advice. I asked my dad. You see, my dad was a New York City firefighter, somebody I thought of as fearless. So I figured I'd ask him, he'd give me advice, I'd do it, hit 400, Yankees. Unfortunately, my dad gave me some different things to think about. I said, Dad, how do you stop being afraid? He said, I'm afraid when I walk into burning buildings. If you're not, there's something wrong with you. To get past fear is I focus on why I'm there and who I'm there to help. When you focus on those things, the fear, although it's still there, is easier to deal with. You just need to learn what needs to be done, focus on that, and everything will come out fine. So I focused on the task at hand instead of focusing on the fear, and it didn't change my swing, but it changed my view of fear. So I wasn't anxiously awaiting for that ball to pummel me in the face. I was focused on hitting. Now I realized it was coming, I could deal with it a lot better. And that small point of view change made all the difference. Spoiler alert, I never got drafted by the Yankees. So focus on that fear. It's okay to have it. What's not okay is not doing anything about it. Next story I want to tell you is about perspective. This isn't a story that happened to me, but I learned it from a physical therapist, been practicing for over 25 years. And this happened to him early in his career. So picture this. A patient sits in front of a physical therapist. She's had pain in her legs, excruciating at times, for a few years. It's limited her ability to work, limited her ability to do hobbies, and exist with her families. She's been in and out of the healthcare system since the pain started and finally arrives in front of the PT with a slew of letters after his name. She's his first evaluation of the day, and the PT has already reviewed her chart and medical history the day before. He's thought about what he'll test, possibilities that her diagnosis could be. He's even looked up a few pertinent articles all about the EBP, right? He's ready. He's got this. And the evaluation begins. The patient's history sounds familiar. He did his homework, remember? He knows this tune. It's textbook. He's got this. So he stops her immediately, gets to work. Remember the letters after his name? Lots of them. Tips, tricks up his sleeve. He employs them all, looking for symmetry, weakness. Nothing's going to get by his trained eye. Once evaluation is over, he immediately switches gears, explains all the things he tested, what he found wrong, and what those things mean. Then he gives her a glimpse of what treatment will look like. He gives all of this confidently, succinctly, and without pause. And he looks up, looks for that patient right in the eye to give him that look that she's bought in. She's glad that she's there with him. And what he sees instead are tears. Totally stunned. What happened? How do you rally from that? He can't think of why she'd be crying, and he struggles to compose himself. She starts in before he can. She says very slowly, "My mom died 2 weeks ago. I've had pain for the last 2 years, and now you're telling me I have 12 things wrong with me. I've seen specialists, doctors, and surgeons, tests and scans. It's been a long process. It's taken a toll on my life. It's also taken me a long time to get here in front of you, and a minute in, you start telling me what's wrong with me. I was looking for someone to listen to me." Try to imagine how you compose yourself after that. Remember, for every patient that walks in, you should be there to listen to the person first. Fancy tech and a lot of certifications are nice, but you can't replace being present. So you're there for a human being. You have to make a connection to help your patients make a change. The order of that is important because I'm going to repeat it. You have to make a connection to then help your patients make a change. So listen. Story number three. It's my final story of the day, but it's the most special story that I've ever been a part of. It's about finding your why. I didn't really know where I belonged in this field. I was a radio DJ for 15 years before coming to physical therapy. Not a typical route for the families and friends to come to physical therapy. But I arrived here and I loved the field and the knowledge. Sitting in the seats that these young men and women are, I just loved the looking forward to the field I was getting into, but I didn't know where I fit. Not many job applications for radio DJ / physical therapist out there, in case you're wondering. I couldn't find my why. But there was one patient that helped to show me that I belonged, and I think about him every day, and this is how I met him. During my third year in PT school at Marymount University, we took a trip to Costa Rica. While we're there, we got the chance to work in an orphanage for 2 weeks with children of all ages and abilities. Most of the patients that were there were cognitively impaired on top of their physical limitations. So things were hard. But you know what? It made it really, really meaningful. But remember, even at this point, just a few months from graduation, I still have no idea where or if I even belong in the field. I tried to quit PT school twice, and my professor wouldn't let me. You see, I liked most of my rotations and my internships. I just didn't love any of them. And looking around at my classmates, they all just seemed so sure. They all just knew exactly what they were going to do and where they were going to do it, how it was going to get done. And I wasn't. I felt like I didn't belong. How could I apply my passion for the profession if I couldn't find a place for it? So back to Costa Rica. When I was there, I met G. I refer to him as just a letter because he was a patient, so I just use his first initial. G was an 18-year-old boy with muscular dystrophy, a particularly wretched disease that robs you of your muscles. For the PTs and the PT students in the audience, here's how G presented as if I was writing his eval. Patient presents with 2+ strength in cervical rotation, 3 out of 5 strength on wrist flexion extension, radial and ulnar deviation bilaterally. No muscular strength above 1 in any other muscle group. Fully dependent for transfers and all other aspects of care since being left in an orphanage at age 13 when his parents were no longer able to care for him at home. He sees the on-site PT once an hour, once a week for stretching, and that's it. Fully cognitively intact, but displayed an overwhelmingly pleasant demeanor. He is equipped with a tilt-in-space wheelchair that he cannot self-propel, fully dependent for all mobility and ADLs. That's what I'd write on an eval. That's what he was on paper. But that's not who G was. Now I'll tell you who he was. Here's how I describe him: as a funny, sarcastic, football-loving 18-year-old kid. He wants to watch and talk about football, specifically his favorite team, La Liga, any chance he gets. He smiles nonstop, engages in conversation with everyone. Fellow residents, caregivers, nuns, random American physical therapy students who barely speak any Spanish. That was me. He's got wit. He would mess with me and my poor grasp of the Spanish language at any chance he got. People would make it a point to go out of their way to say hi to him, because when he says buenos dias, you can tell he genuinely hopes you have a good day. He was truly a remarkable person, and I learned so much working with him for 2 weeks, but I still didn't know where I fit. The day we were leaving the orphanage was filled with a lot of emotions, and I was stuck in the fact that we were leaving him, but really, that we were leaving him no better than when we arrived. Couldn't improve his muscular dystrophy while we were there. That's the part that really angered me. Then I realized something important. I was looking at the same patient that all of my classmates and professors were, and I saw something that no one else did. Opportunity. Why can't we give him something that will let him move? How and when he wants to move? He needed a power wheelchair. It was so obvious to me, but he's in an orphanage in Costa Rica. Money is a gigantic barrier to buy day-to-day items, never mind a $19,000 power wheelchair. It was when I faced that problem that I realized that my weird background in broadcasting and journalism and communications actually set me apart from my classmates in a good way. Finally, I felt at home. So I set out to solve this problem that I saw my way. I started a GoFundMe page to help him buy his wheelchair. I asked anybody that would listen to help, not by begging, but by sharing his story. I made the story about a person, an amazing person, not about a chair. It's always about people. I used the skills I'd obtained from my background for him through storytelling, connecting, and communicating. And I told people what a chair like that could do for a kid like him. You see, he wasn't fully dependent for all tasks of mobility. He sat still all day in one place, never able to change his view or explore his world. He was always at the mercy of where he was put. I became his voice. I told the story to everybody, even if they didn't want to listen, and shared his story to somehow try to overcome that large $19,000 obstacle, because it mattered for him. While I was doing it, I wound up finding a place in the profession, and I found it because of him. I'd go on to merge my communications background with my physical therapy career, and that's the job I have today. It took him to show me that there was a place that I could be useful for a person in this profession. And for that, I will be forever grateful to him. And that was the lesson I wanted you to take from here. Find your passion, find your why first, and you can find a way to bring it to this great profession, even if it's as random as being a radio DJ physical therapist, which actually isn't a thing. 66 days after we started, 4 days short of graduation, I stood in front of my classmates and announced that we had passed the mark of $19,000 and he would get his chair. A few weeks later, I was a plane back to Costa Rica to personally deliver it to him. And it had been a few months since I saw him, and I was guessing that by that time he'd forgotten about me. But when I turned the corner, there he was sitting in his old chair and looked at me without hesitation or surprise, as if I'd just seen him yesterday, and said, "Hola, Jimmy." I told him I brought him something. Now remember, this is a kid who's seen wheelchairs before. He's very, very familiar with chairs. And he didn't really notice there was anything different about this. As we were positioning him in, I could tell he just didn't think there was something different. Until one of his arms flopped out to the side and he hit the joystick. And the chair leapt. His face said it all. Oh, it moves on its own. No, it moves for you. Starting then, he decided where he went, when he went, and how he got there. He was in charge. With an infinite amount of possibilities in front of him, I asked, "Where do you want to go?" "I just want to ride." Best answer from an 18-year-old ever. The first hour, he pretty much looked like he was driving drunk. It was not pretty. Second hour, he was able to navigate turns and mostly avoid running directly into brick walls. Please don't damage the $19,000 wheelchair I just bought you. By the third hour, he drove himself into the dining room, navigated around furniture, and positioned himself at the head of the table ready for lunch. My work here is done. Class, you've earned the right to put on your white coats today. It marks a change in you, an outward symbol to the people in attendance today. And of course, to those people who will undoubtedly see pictures of you wearing these bright white coats on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Don't forget your Snap story. Make sure you realize that this coat is not a symbol of what you've learned here at school. It's not a symbol of what you know. I hope it's a reminder of what you're capable of and what is possible going forward. You're going to be in a position to impact people's lives, to change their worlds, and these opportunities might not always be clear at first. I want you to know these are precious, and I know that you will treat them as such. We don't know where you go after this, but I can promise you this. You will experience fear, but you'll focus on who you're there for, and that'll guide you through it. You'll be in a position where someone needs you, and I know you will remember to listen first. And you'll have an opportunity to change someone's world. But remember, you might be the only person who can see it and make it happen. And when that situation presents itself, I know you'll take it. Congratulations. I cannot wait to hear what you'll accomplish next. Thank you.
Follow us online.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at PT Pinecast.
Can't thank our friends at RS Medical Staffing enough for the support they give the show. And here's the deal. Looking to support you too. That's why they exist. Looking to find physical therapist jobs anywhere in the 50 United States, and they've got it all covered. Need a license question answered? Figure out how to get housing, continuing education, insurance? They've dealt with it for a long time. Travelers in all 50 states, in all settings as well. So check out what they have available, AURESmedical.com. You get assigned somebody who's looking out for you. Where do you want to go? Where are you going to fit best? And new grads, students looking to graduate very shortly, you guys are available to travel as well. It's broaden your horizons anywhere that you want to go. So check them out at AURESmedical.com. Those guys nice enough to support the show everywhere that we go as we travel the country, like South Carolina, for MUSC. So they've got it covered. Positions in all 50 states, in all settings. These guys will find you a job doing what you want to do, where you want to do it. Isn't that good? AURESmedical.com. That's Aureus Medical Staffing.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.